You're listening to Agriculture Today.
JBS already adjusting operations at its Greeley, Colorado beef plant. That ahead of a potential labor strike, scaling back slaughter and shifting cattle to other facilities as negotiations continue. According to Reuters reporting, the company didn't slaughter cattle at the plant on Monday. It's begun adjusting cattle deliveries and processing schedules while redirecting livestock to other plants to meet customer needs. Some cattle feeders said harvest bookings canceled for the week. At least one shipment rerouted to the company's facility in Cactus, Texas. The operational shift comes as workers represented by United Food and Commercial Workers Local 7 prepare for a possible strike as early as the 16th after issuing the required termination notice for their contract extension. Regionally, cattle feeders adjusting logistics and delivery timing, raising concerns about short-term cattle backlogs and volatility in fed cattle and boxed beef markets if reduced slaughter persist. Looking ahead, though, JBS continues investing in long-term processing capacity. It includes a recently launched $150 million expansion at its Texas plant, underscoring the company's flexibility in managing regional supply flows. Well, you know, farmer protests across India escalating as negotiations continue between the U.S. and that nation on an interim trade framework aimed at expanding market access and reducing trade barriers. And it's drawn scrutiny from producers concerned about import competition. Demonstrations spreading across several states and into New Delhi, where farm unions argue tariff concessions could allow lower cost U.S. ag products into India, pressuring domestic prices. Protest leaders say small scale Indian producers, many operating on limited acreage, can't compete with large, mechanized, and subsidized U.S. farms, raising concerns about incomes and rural employment. Now, negotiations remain, but officials with the U.S. Trade Representative and Indian counterparts continue working toward an agreement that would reduce tariffs and ease non-tariff barriers while addressing long-standing market access dispute. U.S. negotiators focused on expanded access for ag and value-added products. Indian officials trying to protect sensitive sectors. The trade minister in India says roughly 90 to 95% of farm products, that includes rice, wheat, dairy, poultry, fruits, and vegetables, will remain outside of that framework. Well, surging global energy prices creating new pressure for textile manufacturers across Southeast Asia. It's raising concerns about production costs, margins, and potential ripple effects for global fiber demand. That recent rally in crude oil tied to the Middle East conflict feeding directly into input costs for textile manufacturers, especially synthetic fibers like polyester that rely on petrochemical feedstocks. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The last administration caused an American agricultural trade surplus crumble into nothing, and in fact, we inherited a $50 billion deficit when we came back 4 years later in just agriculture products.
Speaking recently at Commodity Classic, Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins on the importance of opening new markets.
I know all of you in this room know these facts, and you have in fact been living them for some time. Last year, I talked about how not one new trade deal had been struck in the 4 years of the previous administration. But since that time, we have had 15 new trade deals and frameworks for U.S. agriculture in key markets like the European Union, the U.K., Japan, Mexico, and Southeast Asia. The U.K., of course, that deal we know opened for the first time in decades, what many thought was impossible, an additional $5 billion in ag export opportunities, including $700 million in new ethanol and better market access for beef. Indonesia agreed to eliminate 99% of the tariffs. Again, this has never been agreed to before. 99% of the tariffs on U.S. exports, including for all agricultural products. Japan agreed to increase the U.S. rice imports by 75% and purchase over $8 billion in agricultural products. The EU agreed to $750 billion of American energy, including our great biofuels, and address non-tariff barriers for the first time for farmers and ranchers. And of course, China is now back to the table, meeting their commitments of 12 million metric tons in this cycle, 25 million in the next, 25 million in the next, and 25 million in the next. And the president is headed to go meet over there, and agriculture will be at the very top of his list.
But on the other side of the equation, she talks about the importance of deregulation.
We are going to reform the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. USDA is rescinding seven agency-specific regulations and is issuing one set of department-wide NEPA regulations, resulting in a 66% decrease in burdensome regulations on you, our farmers, and our ranchers. Also, the EPA is clarifying once and for all the waters of the U.S. rule, or WOTUS, to conform and ensure that the historic Sackett versus EPA SCOTUS decision is giving the relief and getting government off the back of our farmers and ranchers in key parts of our country. I know in Texas there's probably a little bit of this, but when I talk to some of our producers in the state of Washington or California or some of the states where they don't have quite as friendly of a supportive elected officials and administration, that it is absolutely destroying many of our family farms and ranches. So we're going to get that right. We will also keep fighting for your right to repair your own equipment. Last month, right? I'm confused why this is a thing, but apparently it is. Last month, the EPA released guidance to manufacturers reaffirming that the Clean Air Act supports rather than restricts Americans' ability to repair their own farm equipment. The timely, affordable maintenance of ag equipment should not be a luxury. It should be a given. That's first. We'll continue to fight to get government off of your backs.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Introducing the heavyweight champion of the livestock operation, Case IH Farmall Utility Series Tractors.
Farmall Utility Tractors don't just outweigh the competition. They're engineered to distribute weight where it works, from the transmission, central housing, and axles to the differentials and final drives. So add some weight to your operation and go the distance with Farmall Utility Tractors.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I think across the board, we always remain concerned in this industry when new species come up for listing, either as threatened or endangered, whenever the agency is petitioned to have to go that route and then furthermore create distinct population segments. You know, for our ranchers, both on private property but on federal lands as well, these additional regulatory hurdles, they create challenges for implementation of projects, carrying out simple grazing activities, oftentimes resulting in less grazing, hurting the industry overall.
Garrett Edmonds with National Cattlemen's Beef Association's Public Lands Council on delisting the lesser prairie chicken.
And what we've seen in a lot of cases, just quite simply not following the science that's out there. For the lesser prairie chicken, we welcomed the agency's determination last week to remove that northern and southern distinct population segments from the federal list of threatened and endangered wildlife. And now granted, that comes in response to a court order. They will initially be proposing a 12-month petition finding process with a 30-day comment period. We are going to be engaged there. We're encouraging our producers in those areas to be engaged there, pushing back on some of this. But most importantly, you know, advocating for the industry. What we've seen with a lot of cases is with grazing and other activities that our producers and ranchers across the West carry out, is the activities they do don't only bolster the habitat, but that then leads to bolstering the wildlife that's there as well. And so I think there's a lot of bad messages out there as it relates to our impacts on the ground that I would say we have the science and the data on our side that says otherwise. And so we're going to continue making sure the agency knows that and making sure the general public knows our role in the landscape as the original conservationists and stewards of the lands.
But how can any landowner proceed when every administration chooses polar opposite paths?
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. To the next part of this conversation, which I would say is where our efforts are focused in the legislative front when we talk about reforming the Endangered Species Act. You may have heard of the ESA Amendments Act of 2025. This is a piece of legislation that we are rallying behind. We are pushing for. It's currently sponsored and championed by Chairman Bruce Westerman of the House Natural Resources Committee. You know, just one of the key elements of this legislation is when the agency makes a determination, key here, a determination to delist, which is important, it puts a judicial stay on that decision, allowing the agency's work and the science to play out ultimately. We've got to implement good science on the ground and follow the agency's decisions there. And what we see far too often is other groups get involved here that, quite frankly, I would say don't want to see our producers succeed and grazing stay on the landscape and ultimately push for further regulations. So to your point, I think we need those conversations where groups want to come together, be active conservationists, active participants in building up the habitat and protecting the wildlife, but still carrying out their day-to-day operations. And on that same end, we need statutory changes in place in Congress to make the ESA work better and work alongside producers, not as a tool as what I would say some environmental groups have utilized it as a tool to lock up land and hinder our food supply chain that we have built.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I don't feel that I am overstating it when I say this is the nightmare scenario.
Josh Linville, Vice President of Fertilizer with StoneX.
If we were to sit there and talk about worst case scenario in fertilizer, what would it be? It would absolutely surround the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. This is something we've talked about for a very, very long time. And yeah, to your point, we talk about nitrogen all the time, but there's also got a massive phosphate impact as well. So we've seen this now for over a week, right? We're a week and 2 days since the Strait shut down, and fertilizer prices are up significantly. We've not seen vessels flow through there. There was hope. We had Trump, you know, making promises and defense promises and things like that, but traffic still stays out of it. And so that nitrogen is unable to flow. And because of that, production is being impacted now.
How's the global market faring?
Not well. Obviously, no shock, right? We saw prices up immediately last week because we went into the weekend, not this last weekend, the one before. Everybody was none the wiser. Everything was calm. Everything was going well. We all woke up Saturday morning to the news. The U.S. and Israel had struck at Iran. By Monday morning, prices were up significantly. And I think to the shock of everybody out there, we didn't see prices really go up throughout the week. It stayed kind of stable. Yeah, there was some ebb and flow, if you will, but prices kind of held to the values they started to set on Monday and Tuesday. From our perspective, from Saturday to say like Tuesday or so, we thought all this price increase was due to kind of the shock of it, the emotion of it. Oh my gosh, the Strait is shut down. And yes, there were some shipping days we would have had to have made up, but we weren't seeing production issues yet. We weren't seeing gas plants be shut down. We were not seeing nitrogen plants be shut down because of the lack of ability to move their product because of this war. As you start to move into later Tuesday, into Wednesday, now those impacts, those real world fundamental impacts started to hit. And now you start to talk about these plants going down. Now, not only are we losing shipping days, we're actually losing produced tons in one of the heaviest export urea channels in the entire world. And so now, actually, as we look at it this morning, Monday morning, I actually did the numbers, relooked at them. If you were to look first half December, and again, I'm going to talk DOLA, New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm not trying to be U.S. centric, but it's just the most liquid, most visible market in the world. If you look at where prices were in the first half of December, and you look at where NOLA urea prices are this morning, based on where barges are trading to start the week, values are up 77%. Wow. And the unfortunate part is, every single day that this continues to go on, the worse it's going to get. So we continue to talk about this market, and we're focusing on this, right? We already had nitrogen problems around the world. Actually, I made a list here to make sure I didn't miss anything. We already had China, who was not going to export until at least August. And frankly, if this continues, a strong case may be made, they may not come back in August. European production, 75% of normal. This has been going on since 21, 22 because they cut off those cheap Russian gas flows. Now you got to start to add in Qatar, Iran, Saudi Arabia, all of them affected by the war, the shuttering of the Strait of Hormuz. And on top of that, Israeli natural gas production has been suffering as well. A lot of that gas goes into Egypt nitrogen production. So we could see more production issues with Egypt. I don't know how you make much for a worst case scenario. And I'm not going to sit there and try and be sensational and say, nobody's going to get anything. It's going to be terrible. There are places that are going to be better. I will say I think North American supplies are in better shape based on the imports that we know and that we believe are coming. I think there's going to be places that are going to be worse off. You look at Europe. You look at Australia. I think these places are going to have a little bit more of a struggle based on what's been coming in, what they still have to buy. So this isn't going to be a one-size-fits-all thing. But the longer this goes on, the more painful it's going to be for everybody in the world. It does not matter where you watch this from. It is going to impact your farm. It's going to impact your operation.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
There are folks that actually have been waiting to purchase U.S. agricultural products.
USDA's Undersecretary for Trade, Luke Lindberg.
One great story was when I was over in Malaysia and had a great opportunity to meet with a restaurant owner there who shared with us that she has recently invested in a processing facility here in the United States so she could be the first one to import U.S. beef to serve at her restaurants in Malaysia as soon as the agreement came into full force. And so it is a win-win when folks can get access and their governments get out of the way to our products. But also recall that the president does want reciprocal trade. He wants wins for both sides. And we've seen that as well. We want coffee from places. We want spices from places. We want bananas from places. Things that we don't grow, we recognize we would love to have those products here in the United States of America. And oftentimes our consumers demand those products. And so there are great opportunities where we can mutually win. But the problem right now is that the data has shown that our farmers and ranchers are not winning at the rate in which they historically have been winning. And so it's our job to get us back to a better place where we can compete on that fair and level playing field, win those contracts we've historically had, and bring that prosperity back to rural America.
Reciprocity with accountability.
We've taken a very dramatically different course on accountability, and it's a very important point. I'm glad you brought it up, because the reality is the president is focused on bilateral trade agreements. So many times in the past, we've had multilateral agreements. There's regions that get together and try to create trade agreements. The president wants reciprocal trade, which means you win and we win on a bilateral basis. And that allows us to use a whole host of ways to rectify and address trade barriers. And so if you're looking at a reciprocal agreement with the United States and agree to some terms and then don't live up to them, there's lots of ways we could address that and will address those situations. I wouldn't want to be on the other end of a phone call from President Trump saying, hey, you told us you were going to do X and now you're doing Y, because I think the president is the consummate deal maker in chief and will use his tools available to him to ensure that countries are accountable to these deals and continue to work on them. This is also the work that our trade and foreign agricultural affairs staff all around the world do every day. We have folks located in almost 100 countries all around the world, certainly covering more than 100 countries, who are every day active in ensuring these agreements are lived up to, and that when issues do arise, we get in front of them quickly and effectively.
And for U.S. farmers, he uses a cotton example.
When I went to Indonesia and was there with our Cotton Council International team members, and one of the things they gifted me with during my travels is a traditional batik shirt, which is a very culturally significant item in Indonesia, made with U.S. cotton. And they are working directly with textile mills in Indonesia to bring U.S. cotton into Indonesia, which not only provides textiles to apparel manufacturers that send it back to the United States, but also send it regionally into Asia and Southeast Asia and other places. That model works well. El Salvador and the United States, we've had some conversations around those topics. So we will continue to work to meet the demand of whatever industry segments are there. If U.S. Can play a role in providing the inputs, in this case cotton, we're happy to do so.
It's Agriculture Today.
Introducing the heavyweight champion of the livestock operation, Case IH Farmall Utility Series Tractors.
Farmall Utility Tractors don't just outweigh the competition. They're engineered to distribute weight where it works, from the transmission, central housing, and axles to the differentials and final drives. So add some weight to your operation and go the distance with Farmall Utility Tractors.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Between policy research, drafting, technical assistance, and the countless turns with the Congressional Budget Office, our staff have proved themselves to be invaluable advocates and resources for sound agricultural policy.
Pennsylvania Representative G.T. Thompson, chairman of the House Ag Committee, during their recent markup of the 26 Farm Bill.
Now, I appreciate the entire teams on both sides of the aisle for the work that they've done to organize and carry out the committee's business. I hope everyone in this room has a sense of urgency about what we are doing here today. Our farmers, ranchers, and rural communities need a new Farm Bill, and they don't need it next year or need it next Congress. They need it now. In my opening remarks yesterday, I encouraged everyone on this committee to not let the perfect be the enemy of the good. In fact, I think I heard that statement repeated by a few of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle. I hope everyone here today felt that they had the opportunity to deliberate ideas, offer amendments, and engage with the will of the committee. It was a slog, but ultimately that is how legislating is supposed to work. It's not meant to be a rubber stamp of the chairman's mark crafted in secret, but rather a process by which the chairman generates a starting point, and then every member of the committee has an opportunity to refine and improve this underlying bill. We built this bill in a way that is not typical for Washington. We did it from the outside in, as versus the inside out. All those travels, look around the room with many of the members here, and this is where the needs were identified, out in the fields, on the farms, on the ranches, in the local fire halls. That is the way you should do legislation. That is the way this was done. Every member of this committee has an opportunity to refine and improve the underlying bill. And that is what happened here today, and I'm proud of all of you who participated. Please believe me that when I say that I want to continue working in good faith with each of you on important policy within our committee's jurisdiction. With that commitment in mind, I ask you to think about the constituents that you represent and the good this bill will do for them. This bill is not about us. This bill is about them. It's about the people that, quite frankly, that feed and clothe this nation, that provide energy resources. It's the people of rural America that provide so much to every American family and, quite frankly, many families around the world. If you care about the future of the farmers and ranchers who feed, fuel, and clothe our country, I hope you'll support this bill. If you care about the 60 million Americans living in rural areas, I hope you can support this bill. And above all, if you believe food security is national security, I encourage you to support this bill. We know that a full five-year farm bill moves the needle for our entire nation, not just farm country. Before us, we have a real opportunity to move American agriculture forward. Now, I'm proud of this bill, and I'm proud of the work that we've done to further improve it in the last 24 hours. And this is just the first step in the process. There's more work to be done, more refinements that can be made. And if we report this bill out with a robust bipartisan vote, we'll have a path to the floor where more improvements can be made. However, if we let partisanship get in the way, if we let perfect be the enemy of good and allow the momentum to stall, then our farmers and rural communities will be left waiting for another year for a long overdue farm bill. That would be a disservice to our hardworking stakeholders.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.